We came, we saw, we once again lost at Wembley. But while Reading may have to get used to another season of the Championship, we're still around. We're still here. We're still providing that, I like to think now we're up to semi-professional joke of a podcast. This is the Tyler Stem Podcast, episode number 131, where we will wrap up the 2016-17 season. We'll give our thoughts not just on that ill-fated day at the National Stadium, but cast our eyes and our minds back, all the way back to August, and look at the highs, the lows, the comedy moments, and lots more. And of course, taking an early look ahead to next season, which, as we sit and record this, isn't even too far away. I think they're back in pre-season in about 2 weeks' time. So, without further ado, let's get into the show. But hopefully, you know by now, having listened to probably, I'd like to think, all of the previous 130 shows. My name is Dan Wimbush, editor of thetylersend.com. This week, I'm joined by a man who predates even me hosting Reading FC podcasts, Mr. Alan West. Westy, hello.
Predates the dinosaurs. Hello, everybody.
And Mr. Mark Mayer, Tyler Stem assistant editor. Mark, how are you?
I'm well. Thank you for avoiding any election day sort of puns. I feared that you were going to be going to the ballots.
No
mailbag sort of puns in there.
No, absolutely not. Especially not with a postie on the show as well. Can't do that. Right. Well, as I said, there's lots to get to. We're going to put a nice little bow around this season and try and shine it up and come out on a positive note. But unfortunately, there is only one place to start, and we do have to go back. I'm sorry. We do have to go back to Wembley.
View from the Tarhurst End. Recapping this week's Championship action.
Just in case you missed it, Reading 0, Huddersfield 0, Huddersfield win 4-3 on penalties. Right, let's move on to news bites. No, we have to talk about this. I don't want to spend too long about this, gents. Nothing personal, but I spent a good 45 minutes talking about it with Will on the day on a show that was on our YouTube feed and on the podcast feed as well. So hopefully by now, if you have brought yourself to listen to our reactions, you have done so by now. So I won't spend too long on it, but we have got the benefit of hindsight now. We are well over a week removed from it. Looking back, first of all, are you over it emotionally?
I was saying as I walked in, I've been to all the playoff final defeats now, but there hasn't been any playoff wins, so you could only consider defeats. And I think as soon as their last penalty at the back of the net, I was halfway down the tunnel, and by the time I got to the train, I just resigned myself to the usual unfortunate disappointment.
You weren't sticking around to watch the Huddersfield trophy presentation.
I can't
to
do
G
that.
Yourself up for next
it's,
season.
It's like your wife leaving with your best mate and seeing them drive off in the car, and you just can't sit there and watch it.
Please don't, Mrs. Wynn, by the way.
Not that that's never happened, but I imagine that's what it must be like.
I'm getting there. It's, you know, you go through the stages, don't you? You go through, you know, your anger, your denial, your bargaining, and then you finally come to your acceptance. And I'm just about there. I think the lingering feeling that I have now, 10 days on, it's just one of disappointment, really. Not even in that we lost and we're not playing Premier League football. I can give or take that. I don't really mind. It's that we didn't really give it a go. I can't come out of this playoff final and with those moments that we had against Bolton, against Swansea, even Walsall, where you thought, I'm really proud of Reading there, gave it a good go. You just come up, there's just too many what-ifs and not the kind of positive what-ifs either.
Yeah, there wasn't enough in the game for us to come out and think, wow, we should have won that game. Do you know what I mean? It was when we got to penalties, it was like, wow, I think we rode our luck enough to win this game on penalties now. And there was never a point where you thought, do you know what, we should have won that game. Whereas with the other games you just mentioned there, at times, apart from probably Swansea, who was well out of it and all of a sudden back in it, we did do enough to win the games at times. But in this game, we just done nothing. I don't think the keeper made a save the whole game, did he?
Well, for me, the moment, like, as we say, the only moment that I sort of regret is the fact of when they missed their penalty. That was a moment when I believed, everyone around me believed that it was going to happen. And they were like, the two people next to me were talking about, oh, if we save Naki Wells' penalty, then we're through. And I kind of leaned over, I was like, no, they've got to save, then score. And at that point in your mind, you're thinking about how it's going to work out, how you're going to win the game and get promoted. And obviously, when that gets taken away from you, and I think it's the worst type of penalty to miss, smashing it over the bar as well.
Yeah, you've got to hit the target. Just hit the target. If a keeper saves it, then great, he saved it. But you've got to hit the target. There's no excuse for not hitting the target for professional football.
I asked Will this on the Monday, and I'll ask you too. Any complaints with who stepped up to take a penalty? There were quite a few grumblings, especially on the day. I think it died down quite quickly afterwards. But a lot of people saying, oh, why is a centre-back taking a penalty?
Again, you can only the takers are obviously the ones that wanted to take the penalties. And I think if you're confident enough to step up, I mean, I thought Kelly, as soon as Kelly stepped up, I thought, I don't know, should he be taking one? But his penalty was excellent. I mean, very calm and cool. And Moore's an experienced footballer. I know he's not a goal scorer by any stretch of the imagination, but you'd have thought that they'd have practiced penalties in training.
Yeah, Stam said they did. They were practicing.
So they must have had known what the five best penalty takers were. Whether they were still on the pitch at the time, God only knows. But again, from 3-1, being 3-1 up, you would expect to win a penalty shootout, and to give it away cheaply by missing the target and then a beaters penalty was poor, let's face it. I thought that was a shame that they really lost the game for themselves rather than Huddersfield beating them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and it was a game that Huddersfield could and probably should have won. Again, looking back on it and looking back on the chances they missed on the day, they had four.
Izzy Brown had a nightmare, didn't he, really?
Amazing chances to win on the day. And if Huddersfield had come away from that losing on penalties, they would have had even more to be sat there thinking, what if? Because just one of those chances. In a way, though, I do wish, in hindsight, knowing that we've lost anyway, I do wish that one of them had gone in, because I think it would have really opened up the game and just made it more interesting to watch. Again, it's now, I don't really care what other football fans think, but there's no pride to, there's pride in the season for Reading, but there's no pride in that game. A lot of neutrals would have watched that game, and I hate to say it, but a lot of the, you know, the Leeds fans have been griping at us all season, other fans said, oh, how Reading up there, what have they done? I'm sorry, you watch that game and you're just sat there thinking, how has this team ever finished third?
Yeah, it was a poor final. It was a dread. It's probably the worst playoff final ever, and we had to sit through it, unfortunately.
It was a slog, and I think, like, I looked, if you take like a social media example, doesn't show too much, but if you look at like the Facebook comments and everything of Reading and Huddersfield getting into the final beforehand, and especially after, the comments that were people saying are, whoever wins, they'll go down. And that playoff final, you looked at it and thought, whoever wins is going to have to invest really heavily or they will probably go down.
Yeah, but again, we've had this debate before. You just got to get up and get the money, haven't you? And then you improve your side, you buy five different players who could be much better than what you've got, and you never know what might happen.
Yeah, but again, I think we see the figure 170. I saw as much as, I think someone was quoting over 200 million worth.
Well, Swansea,
now,
since they beat us in that playoff final, they've been up all the way since, and that's 600 million or so they've earned from that playoff final.
The thing is, though, you earn that money, but I think what people forget sometimes is you spend that money. Don't forget, Reading were only in the Premier League 5 years ago. Mm. 4 years ago, in fact, we got relegated. And what have Reading got to show from that money? Now, you spend so much money on wages, and we'll talk about Danny Williams later, but just doing the sums in my head, Danny Williams has been on a 40 grand a week contract with Reading for four seasons. Do the maths, add in a few basic bonuses, and I think it cost, £600,000 to £800,000 to sign him in the first place. They spent nearly £10 million on Danny Williams for four seasons, and ultimately, what they really got to show for it? So, and again, I'm not saying it's all Danny Williams' fault, but don't necessarily sit there and think, oh, just because we missed out on the money, we've missed out on setting the club up for life.
We've seen it before, haven't we, where you've paid a lot of money for players and they've ultimately been a waste of money. I'm not saying Williams is. I like Williams, he's a good player, but is he really worth that sort of money?
Yeah,
I mean, that's what an average player gets now. So
that's what I mean. I mean, how much money, more entertainment have we had from watching Danny Williams for 4 years that we would have had from, I don't know, trying to think of an average Championship midfielder off the top of my head. Danny, he's below average.
Hope Akpan,
there you go. Yeah. There's a good example.
But you look at the Premier League teams that are kind of in that region at the moment. You look at Sunderland are paying, or were paying, £12 million to players like Ndong and stuff. You look at Watford, of that Isaac Success they bought for £12 million. These are substantially more money than we've ever paid for players. And are those players actually that much better?
No.
Or are they just overpriced because you're a Premier League team?
Well, that's the thing. Because the Premier League teams earn that sort of money, then it automatically pushes the price of everyone up, doesn't it? I mean, average players now are worth £10 million.
And this is one of the things that almost kind of makes the, if there is a softener for me, it's the fact that I do look at this Reading team, and yeah, I would have loved, what I'm really sad and left me broken and so depressed was, like you said, it was watching the other team celebrate. It was seeing the fourth team now have that party at our expense. If you count the two semi-finals, not to mention that last day of the season game against Birmingham, which was a playoff final as well in 2009, for all intents
and purposes.
And the
one when we finished seventh and invaded the pitch
exactly.
That's basically a playoff semi-final.
Seeing another set of fans celebrate. And I just so desperately wanted it to be us. I didn't care about what happened next. I wanted that on the day joy.
The only other way of looking at it is we've been lucky enough to see our team win the league.
Oh, absolutely.
A lot of them haven't. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And don't get me wrong. And I was thinking about this. That, you know, a lot of people say, oh, it's fine. You know, if we get automatic promotion next season, it'll make it all better. It takes a bit of the pain away, but it never, those scars from the playoff finals don't heal until you win one.
No, and again, I've been to all of them and I remember all of them.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, and it's depressing enough thinking about them. So.
But as I said, the comforting aspect comes to me. Reading had got promoted, and I mean this with no ill will to Huddersfield fans. I mean, hopefully by now you've read Dave Harris's open letter to Huddersfield fans, which has received tremendous feedback from the wider footballing community, especially Huddersfield fans. I very much encourage you to read it if you haven't. Head over to thetarlesden.com. It's still high up the front page, but... And he wished Huddersfield all the best and credit to their fans. And I wholeheartedly agree with the sentiment. I thought Huddersfield fans were brilliant, very humble in victory, no trouble anywhere around the stadium on the day. And they deserve their chance to have a go, enjoy their season in the limelight. But my footballing brain tells me they're coming straight back down and in painful style, because this was too neither team ready for the Premier League. I don't see how Huddersfield score enough goals to keep themselves up.
And Huddersfield won't attract players that will keep them up either. I'm not saying we would, but I'm saying Huddersfield certainly won't.
They'll have to do a Burnley in effect, won't they? They'll have to do that kind of thing of picking up the odd championship player like Andre Gray and Sam Vokes, who can, you know, step up, even though that is a risk, obviously, to sign those sort of players, and hope that the players they do have do somehow manage to do it.
But
themselves.
Burnley went up in style. Burnley went up in style. They were in the top two. They were a strong team. And I remember watching that year and saying, they've got this game plan, they've got the works, and they had those players to score goals.
And players like Joe Barton as well.
Yeah, powerful team there as well, don't they? Powerful, big, strong team.
Yeah, who is scoring the goals for Huddersfield? And this Gengen pressing, I mean, we saw it at Wembley. They tired. And I just don't see how they've got the quality to play that style against Huddersfield. I hope I'm wrong. I said I got nothing, but I wish Huddersfield all the success in the world. But I would have said exactly the same if Red had been going up. They would need a massive, massive overhaul.
But the point is, it makes your club stronger. At least it should for the next four or 5 years, shouldn't it? As long as it's invested properly, then Huddersfield should be a championship side for the next 10 years as a minimum. You know what I mean? As a worst case scenario, they'd be a championship side. If they get relegated from the Premier League, they will sustain that level, whereas Huddersfield haven't traditionally for a long, long time.
Any other thoughts on the wider day itself, on the wider experience of being at Wembley? I mean, we're going to have a video up. We had several people, myself and Mark included, taking videos on the day from their journey, from literally waking up to getting home. So that's going to go up in a couple of weeks' time when I finish editing. But Westy, what was the whole day like for you? Because you say, you know, you've been to four of these things.
Well, again, it was expensive. It rained. I stood outside Lidl with four cans before the game.
Sprite, obviously.
And then I sat for a terrible drink match. Away. I sat for a terrible match, and then I see him get beat on penalties. So the day was awful.
Overrated, isn't it?
It's overrated, yeah.
Ah, well, there we go. That's Mark, any better experiences to share?
I mean, my only kind of gripe was this whole, like, fan zone idea. I couldn't find it, mainly. I was kind of walking down Wembley Way, and there was no sign or anything of it. And apparently it was over to the right-hand side, and the right-hand side was where the Huddersfield fans were walking. So I kind of thought that was a bit of a dud. As it is, you go up and have, like, your overpriced hot dog and everything, and it's fine as long as you're with your family and you're having a good time. But then, as you know, you lose on a penalties, that kind of overshadows it all, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it's a bit like Christmas, isn't it? It's so yes. Much under the tree, you think yes, and then when you actually open everything, oh.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good day, but it's just, I'll ask this question because I think it was Russell Kempson who's attracted a little bit of stick this year for his work with Get Reading. I think it was him, and I apologise if it wasn't, wrote before the final that he couldn't bring himself to watch this one because he couldn't bear to be hurt again, and he got a lot of stick for it. But after the fourth one, I can see where he's coming from. Westy, if Reading make the playoff final next season, have you got any second thoughts about going?
You know, my dad's been going to watch Reading for 40 years and he didn't go to the playoff final because he said the last time I got beat against Swansea, he said, I'm not coming again. And he stuck to his guns and he didn't come. I know he wanted to come, he was keen to come, but he decided I ain't going to go for exactly the same reason.
I'm interested in that, but because speaking to him now, do you think he hurt less from not being there?
Yes, because he could switch the telly off and then go and have a cigar outside and not be in the rush to get out and True. Seeing everyone celebrating and all the other stuff that
waiting
goes on.
Waiting in the train queue for 45 minutes.
Listening to the celebrations from the train station.
So where do you say? I mean, obviously you got nippers, so they'll probably be nagging you to go along. But if you were a free single man, and
I'll be there.
You'd be there.
Yeah.
Mark?
Because I'm still living on to that hope that one day I'll see him win.
You can't miss the one.
Yeah, you can't miss the good one.
I mean, I've seen him win at Wembley, so I'm in the category where I've actually seen him win a game at Wembley. But I'd like to see him win a playoff at some point. It'd be nice.
Mark, would you have any second thoughts?
I think if it turned out that I was on holiday, I wouldn't be like, oh, I've got to cancel all my plans, etc. But realistically, I would be there, yeah.
Yeah,
I'm just hoping when the season starts that people don't say that Reading have got a better home record at Wembley than Tottenham have, because obviously Tottenham fans have been pretty disappointed with Out of Four over the course of a season.
Oh, dear me. Yeah, it's got to be, I say it's got to be us one day. Maybe we'll just be the most unlucky team. We have tied Sheffield United's record for most playoff final defeats without winning one. It's just mad in football how you get teams like Blackpool and Huddersfield that just seem to do it. They just seem to go to Wembley and win. And there are other teams like Reading and Sheffield United that just cannot, for love nor money, get themselves over the line.
But the ridiculous thing is there's no rhyme or reason. No. It's not as if it's the same team turning up every time. It's completely different size.
And completely different games as well. We don't always stack it and lose 4-0. We either draw 0, go to extra time most of the time as well. 3 out of 4 go to extra time. Yeah. And
it's just, as I said, there's no reason for it to happen. It just seems to, doesn't it?
Yeah, so yeah, lots of what AFC said. I wish Reading had gone for it a little bit more with hindsight, but hindsight's 2020, and I think everybody who saw the team line up and seeing the same team that had gotten past Fulham, I don't think many would have had complaints. Although I was certainly glad when Joe Vandenberg got substituted, because did you see the heart rate monitors on the scoreboard?
Yeah,
Steve, we need to get
70.
We need to get Steve on the show, because that man is ice cold.
I reckon he was working behind the bar and he wasn't even at the game.
Left the heart rate monitor on.
It's Steve. It was Steve, the Man United fan from Reading.
It was like 77 when it all began. Nearly up 200, I think.
Yeah, the Huddersfield guys were like 100. Were like, seriously, get some medical attention to those folks.
You can see the north south divide in terms of health and fitness thing. Because it's the Huddersfield
now,
fans.
Now, Mark. No generalisation to our northern listeners, but no, it was getting some alarming rates, but good old Steve kept his cool.
Maybe he should have took a penalty.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, should have had one on Liam Moore.
we've seen lots of messages from the Reading players in the aftermath, and you know, people like Liam Moore apologising, and look, they've got absolutely nothing to apologise for, and if anyone does think that it's right to give a beater or more stick, just do one, because I'm sorry, you tried taking a penalty in front of 75,000 with £200 million on the line.
I must admit, you've just triggered my memory there, because when he posted that he'd apologised, I thought Liam Moore, for the season he had the least reason to apologise for anything, because he's been amazing. If he wouldn't have been in that side, we wouldn't have got to the playoffs anyway.
Oh, exactly. It's the same as anyone, isn't it? It's like you can't blame Barry Hunter and Tony Rouget. You can't blame Archie Lovell.
You can both blame Rouget's backside. You got out of the way a bit quicker. Maybe we'd have got won that game as well.
Okay, but for his part in the season, and all the players that played against Swansea as well, I mean, the people that cocked up on the day are people like Ian Hart and Zurab, who were a big part of getting there. So it's just the cruel nature of football. So it's, Huddersfield get to look forward to the Premier League. We've got another season in the Championship, and we'll get to it. We'll move on to a combined News Bites and Pub Chat, all sort of rolling it into one, where we'll round up some of the key stories that are developing since that day at Wembley, and some things to look forward to as well. And then we've got the mailbag as well. So that wraps up Wembley. Let's move on.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Okay, well, lots to move on to now for Reading, because the season's done. We can't dwell on Wembley too much longer. And the unfortunate side for not just Reading, who've lost, but Huddersfield as well, who've won, is you've got less time to prepare now for the season, because while most teams have had since May the 7th to start getting their houses in order, both Reading and Huddersfield were kind of waiting to see what happened. So they've lost 3 weeks of pre-season planning, and they've got to give the players and the management and everything a break as well. I'm sure they've done prep work, but it's a quick old turnaround for them. As I said, they'll be back for pre-season in about 2-3 weeks' time. So lots to get on with on and off the pitch, including the pitch. Good news, the pitch is being relaid fully, I believe, for the first time in 11 years. So hopefully the sort of sandy beaches that we've been used to seeing in November to February will be a thing of the past.
Ironically, it started to look good at the end of the season.
It always does, though, when the sun comes out. But this is much, much overdue. And it'll be nice, especially with the style of football that Stam's trying to play. They are getting a nice brand new surface. And with London Irish moving on, reportedly, and I think they've got one season left. So hopefully this one will do us well for a long time. But the money for that has come from our new Chinese owners. As we've touched on in a couple of shows since that Fulham second leg, we have brand spanking new owners. Dai Young and Dai Zhuli completed their takeover. I only bring this up again because it's emerged that they have secured a £60 million loan to the club. Now, there were some conflicting reports saying that, oh, is this a £60 million war chest for Stam, or is it not? No, it's a loan, and what it's basically doing, and we understand, is that it's wrapping up some existing loans, that £10 million loan we had in January, some existing debts and credits and whatnot, and pumping some equity into the club. So it's not a free gift. It adds up to the loan. Now, where this puts our entire debt, I'm not sure. As the last set of accounts revealed, the debt was around about 80 million. So some of that might have gone, but I think realistically, we're looking now at a football club that owes it over 100 million pounds. And while that might sound alarming, it's unfortunately very prevalent in the Championship, Mark.
Yeah, we basically got Carol Vorderman in, haven't we? We've consolidated all our existing loans into one more manageable lump sum, haven't we?
They will repossess our home if we do not keep up with the payments.
I think they've already taken our home, haven't they?
Yeah, the car park's gone.
They've taken your car park, yes, and your training dome. So new owners, I mean, Westy, you know, we've been through since we've turned into the Tarlest End podcast, we've now been under, what, three or four different owners. How are you feeling about this one in the early days?
Again, it's another case of a foreign investor coming in and loaning the club money, isn't it? It's not unusual. It happens to all of them now. I think it's probably now, speaking as again, without knowing what they're going to do with the club, I don't think they're going to come in and not try and get promoted. I think they obviously want to get their investment out as soon as possible. And if you get in the Premier League, you can do that, can't you? So
absolutely.
I think they're here to try and get rid of the Premier League. And I think, personally, that they've got a good basis to do that based on the squad they've got at the moment.
Yeah, Mark, it sounds like work has also begun on the training ground. There's some stories we've been contacted by a few fans saying they've noticed trucks going in and out of the site. So stuff certainly seems to be happening on that front. So at the moment, cautiously optimistic?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm not demanding that we go and spend £20 million in the summer. I don't think that'd be good for the squad. But like, as Westy says, they've got a much better basis than the Ties had when they came in, because it was a bit of a train wreck after Zingarevich. The Ties have steadied it. Now the Chinese can come in and hope. I think infrastructure is the first place I would go as well. I'd agree that the pitch and the training ground are probably more pressing issues than, you know, signing another Mate Vidra. But as the summer goes on, we'll see exactly how much they're willing to put into players.
Yeah, Brian Tavraden, the club's technical director, has spoken to a couple of local news outlets recently, The Chronicle and Get Reading, and has very much stressed that he says, yes, money is available, it will be sensible investment, they're not going to come in and throw money at it. And that's what you want to hear. You don't want to see the ridiculous vanity signings that have blighted us in recent years.
Yeah, again, I don't think that will happen, but I also think that you'll get an indication of where they want the club to go by what some of the players do and what Yapstam does himself, you know what I mean? If all of a sudden you get a few jumping ship, then you think, maybe the meeting's not gone too well. I think Yap's in a good position at the moment because his stock is extremely high. If whether they got promoted or not didn't make any difference. He'd got a club from 17th to 3rd in one season with not a massive budget. I mean, they spent on players, obviously, 3.5 million was from the Chinese investors anyway. But if he suddenly leaves and then you see a few of the others start floating away or looking for other clubs, then you think, maybe not. But I personally think that they will say to him, look, we're going to try and get to the Premier League, and they will give him the best opportunity to do that.
Yeah, and that's a great place to segue into the Stam speculation. This week alone, he's been linked with jobs at Ajax and Leeds, of all clubs, who are looking for a new manager after Gary Monk decided to quit. I don't see that one happening, but the Ajax link is strong. Obviously, he came from there as both a player and as a coach. He worked with Young Ajax before moving to Reading, and Brian Tavraden's got that link as well. Today, his agent has apparently come out and said that Stam won't be going to Ajax. Stam himself has said in the days after the playoff final that he's happy at Reading. He's looking forward to building something. So all positive noises at the moment, Mark. But have you got any fears that we might well have to build a dream under a new man?
Nah, not too much. I mean, I don't... The whole Stam going thing, I think in a couple of years, definitely he'll be on his way. I don't think we'll have him for that long, maybe even only one more season. But if you're Ajax obviously have their links, but if you're Crystal Palace, for example, and you're looking for a new manager, I don't understand why you go to him and not Slavisa Jokanovic. The Fulham manager has got Watford promoted, he's got Fulham from basically where we were to where we are now. I don't understand why Stam would be as high up on your list of candidates as someone like that.
It's name, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's his name that gets his foot in doors, and it got his foot in our door, obviously. And the fact that he's done well and he's a big name creates a want from other clubs, doesn't it? But I think if you look at the way they play, unless you're going to play the Dutch way like we have been moulded into or tried to be moulded into, is there much point in changing everything and bringing him in like Crystal Palace? Now, I think Crystal Palace would be safe anyway. You know what I mean? I know they struggled a little bit this season, but the sort of players they've got are not a side you look at and think that team's going to get relegated.
They had Allardyce last year as well. That's a big transition.
That's what I'm saying.
Sam Allardyce,
you're asking to change the whole thing, and that could get you relegated, because the Premier League it doesn't matter how good a manager you are, you can only work with the players you've got, and you know that the top six are going to be there or thereabouts again, and you're going to get beat by most weeks anyway.
Yeah, someone like a Swansea might have made a bit more sense if their job was going. Swansea. But like you hear like West Ham. And
but then Swansea don't tend to get big name managers, do they? They tend to get players.
Well, they had Laudrup, didn't they?
Yeah, but they tend to put in. Yeah, again, Laudrup, yeah. But they tend to put in people that fit their mould rather than big names that come in and change things.
True. True, but it'll be interesting. I mean, this is going to go on. I mean, in saying that, I suppose, again, the fact that Reading did go so deep into the season has kind of done them a bit of a favour, because a lot of clubs have probably decided the direction they're going in. It's one to watch out for. I mean, I know his agent has come out and said there's no link with Ajax today, but I'm sorry. Been burned too many times by managers saying, oh, I'm not interested in going there, and then they turn around and...
I think Stam will see out his last year, no matter what, and then he'll leave, even if we get promoted.
I think he sees something in this team, and I think he has built a bit of a bond with the club and stuff from this season, and going so close that he does seem the type of person that would want to see the job through and just sort of go that extra step, or at least get to the point where he goes, you know what, I can't take this club forward.
Yeah, and the thing is with Stanley, he's, because his stocks are high and because he's played in lots of different countries, his brand really goes across whole of Europe, not as where some of the managers would be probably.
Well, Gary Monk's probably not going to get a job in Germany, is he?
Or Italy.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. It's Italy. I was reading an Italian website the other day and I realised that back in January they had an interview with his agent and it wasn't, you know, anything special. They were just talking about Reading and I thought, when else would a Reading manager have an interview on an Italian website?
You're saying Brian McDermott's not an appealing attraction for Italian websites?
No, I hear he's big in Sweden.
It's, well, there you go. I don't want to know where else he's big. Moving on. So Stam, hopefully, is staying. The future of Danny Williams is a lot more up in the air. And it's a shame in a way, because I thought, just very briefly touching on the playoff final, I thought he was easily Reading's man of the match on the day. One of his very best performances in a Reading shirt after four seasons. But he is out of contract. Speculation linking him, funnily enough, with Huddersfield. He's already been pictured with Kachunga on their post-season holidays. So again, do you think we've seen the last of Danny Williams in a Reading shirt, Westy?
I hope not, but I think probably, yeah, because he's getting to the point of his career now that if he wants to play in the Premier League, it's going to have to be sooner rather than later, and I don't think he'd want to go for another Championship season on less money when he can play in a Premier League probably now.
Mark?
Yeah, I mean, in reality he's not going to sign a 1-year deal at Reading, so if he commits to 2 or 3 years here, then he's going to be facing up to potentially 3 more years in the Championship, and that's not going to be as appealing to him as at least a 2-year deal with a team that might get relegated next year from the Premier League.
Yeah, and I don't know how... I really flip-flop with Danny Williams, because I think at times he is a brilliant, driven, exciting midfielder to watch, and other times I just think, is he really worth... As I touched on earlier, Reading have basically paid the equivalent of £10 million for him for four seasons. And when you actually look at his goal return, his assist return, and what we've actually got from him, you think, again, could they not have got that from somebody else? Do they really need to pay that money? As I said, he was on a reported for £40,000 a week. He's not going to be keen to take a pay cut to stay in the Championship, like you say. And also, I'm not sure how comfortable I am with Reading, now that we haven't got parachute payments, spending that £40,000 a week on another 2-3 year deal for him. I suppose the compromise agreement is to give him a contract like that and sort of say what they said to Doyle and Hunt after Reading got relegated and they stayed, look, give us a year out of it. There's a release clause in it of, I don't know, two, that gets activated after a season of $2 million or something, yeah. But I don't think he's going to be here.
No, I don't think it'd be, and I think it's a shame because Williams, like I say, he's got drive. I do like Williams. I mean, he's not the most skillful, scores a lot of goals for you, but he has got drive, and I think he's the only midfielder we've got that's a little bit different to the others, whereas, all right, he might not be the best Barca in the world, but he can carry a ball and take the game to teams, and he's got amazing energy, and I think we'll miss him. But can he be replaced on the sort of money he is? Yeah, I think you could replace him.
Yeah, it's. I imagine, you know, Reading's scouting network goes far and wide, but you want to see a nice, hungry young player come in to sort of, or maybe someone with some bit of experience, because you do have that young midfield with Evans, Swift and Kelly in there.
Yeah, you're going to need someone who's around about his age, sort of 26, 27, 28 sort of age, to carry the youngsters through in the games that are difficult. So we've seen this year that because we have got a relatively young side, we took some hammerings away from home, and I think you're going to need them experienced heads in the side to carry that young team through.
Well, you've got a ready-made replacement in Stephen Quinn if he's fit.
Yeah, it's a big if, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's in him for a long, long time. And there's another good player, Stephen Quinn. I like him. But again, also it makes our midfield very small, doesn't it? I think Swiss is quite weak.
And we've Kelly's weak.
I mean, George Evans isn't small.
But he isn't. But I'm saying, if you're going to play Kelly and you're going to play Swift and you're going to play the Irishman as well, Quinny, you need someone who's a bit more powerful.
Yeah. He's the only major first teamer that is out of contract this summer, so everyone else is tied up. But Mark, any fears around anybody else in the squad that you could see maybe being poached by another club?
I mean, the rumours we've had so far would have Liam Moore to Burnley as a rumour. Yeah. That just seems to me like a pretty staple. Burnley are a defensive team, Moore's a young English centre back. It's kind of a 2+2=4
as a replacement for King.
As a rumour, isn't it?
Yeah.
As reality, I'm not sure about it, because I think a lot of these Premier League teams want Premier League players who are guaranteed to perform there. I think it's more likely the top Championship teams come and throw silly money at them. We've had that. That's been the problem for the last 5 years, really. If, you know, Derby come in and throw £10 million at Liam Moore, then who would say no in a large sense? Hopefully the club would say no. Hopefully Liam Moore would say no, but it's not implausible, is it?
Yeah, you notice the other day, Curtis Davis going to Derby. That's a great signing for them. But I think he only went for £2 million. So it's what Reading would even be able to get for some of these players. I suppose the good thing is they have got them all tied up under contract. So they are in that position that we were after the Swansea final, where they could demand £5 and a bit million for Matt Mills. Can't believe someone paid it.
You know.
And what now seems like a pretty much a bargain, £5 million for Shane Long. So they're in a good position. Westy, anyone that you think might get poached?
I think if the manager stays, I think the players will want to stay and give it another shot. And I can't see Liam Moore and players like that wanting to go and play for Burnley. I don't see the point, really, when you're in a side that is potentially could be there or thereabouts again. I think they would want to give it one more time if the manager's still there. If he leaves, then, like I said, you might see a few of them decide to go as well.
Yeah, I think all of them are young enough into their Reading tenure where they can give it that one more season. You know, could I see someone coming in for Swift or Kelly? Yeah, but again, they're going to look at it and say, am I going to get the regular playing time that I'm going to get at Reading?
Do you know what? I've watched Swift all season. Sometimes I think, you know what? I think you're a bit overrated. I think since he got injured, the back end of it, I think he's been poor for the last two or three months.
He's the opposite of Williams for me. Williams is the big game player who appears in the Wembley games, the playoff game, is exceptional. When you're at home to, you know, Wigan, I don't think Williams really offers you that much against a team that's sat back deep.
But Swift will give you that
Swift
moment.
Swift is
brilliant.
The opposite. Swift can't do it on the big games. He had a terrible game at Brentford earlier in the season, and you could tell the fans and the whole history he had with them got to him. And it's the same at Wembley. Like, he's not a big game player, but against the lower teams, he's decent.
Well, he's with England in the Under-21 European Championships this summer, which is, I think, both a blessing and a curse. I would have quite liked him to go away and get a bit of a rest, because I still don't think he's fully fit.
He's not looked the same since he got injured halfway through the season. I think the power-wise, he sort of, in some games I've watched him, especially against Fulham, when he's beat a man and they've got back at him, you know what I mean? He's not... It's like he's...
His touch for me at Wembley, they just let him down.
His all-round game seems to be a bit below what you'd expect from him, so I wouldn't have thought anyone watching him in the last 2 or 3 months would have thought, you know, that's the player I'm going to go and spend 7-8 million for. I don't think it'd happen.
Yeah, and he's very young, same as, you know, he's only, I think, a year older than Kelly. And we all think of Kelly as this bright new newcomer on the scene. You've got to keep in mind as well for Swift that, as well as he's done, he's still new on the scene. And I think for Kelly it's too early. I don't think he's at that Gylfi Sigurdsson level where he's so good he's going to walk into a team. Could he go to a Swansea and be part of their squads? Sure.
He would be part of their squad, though, wouldn't he? He wouldn't start.
No.
He doesn't start every week for us.
He's not caught the headlines enough. Like, Sigurdsson scored 18 goals or something in that first season. If Kelly had anything like that goal tally, I think it'd be more likely. But he just doesn't really contribute in that sense.
Yeah, and you look up and down the rest of the team, and again, there's not really anyone that's either stood out enough to demand a bit. I mean, if McCleary had played the way he did in the first half of the season, for the second half of the season, yeah, I could see someone taking a punt and him going for one last shot at the Premier League. But he finished the season badly. Kermigan's going to finish his career here. Yeah. Al-Habsi, the same. Abita, I thought he'd play very well. He could be one, actually. I could see someone maybe coming for Abita.
Again, because, you know, fullbacks are such rare breeds.
He just seems sell now, though, Gunter, when he didn't move last summer.
As soon as you see a safe option, there's always rumours that, you know, Newcastle are going to buy him as their second choice right back, and those kind of rumours will pop up over the season.
I think you're more likely to see the two Fulham fullbacks go to the Premier League than you are our fullbacks. I think Gunter and Abita are at their level. I think they are good Championship footballers, but they're not Premier League footballers.
I saw a little, I don't know, I saw a little bit out of Gunter in the last, sorry, not Gunter. I mean, Gunter, right. So a little bit out of Obita, especially in that Fulham away game that reminded me of that first season he played at left back, where you thought, there's something here.
Yeah, it's consistency, though, isn't it? That's why you're a top player.
And he's
player.
Still young as well, Obita, so that's the thing.
He is, yeah.
McClivey's too old, no one's going to want him now.
Yeah, so not a lot of worry elsewhere. I said, I think they're bringing a good mix now of young and experienced. They just need that couple of two or three, just like they did in 2005-06, where they went, you know what, we come close, and they added that quality. They got in Lita for the guaranteed goals. They got in Doyle, and they were lucky. They weren't lucky with Doyle, in essence, but they brought in people like Brynjar Gunnarsson. How you'd love for that Brynjar Gunnarsson to sign for Reading this summer. It'd be perfect. So it remains to be seen what happens there. A couple of other moves have gone. Craig Tanner's joined Motherwell, which was a bit of a surprising one. Thought he was destined to sign for Plymouth.
Yeah, that's a long move, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's a long way. Well, best way you were playing.
In fairness, sorry Motherwell, but a lot of Scottish Premier League teams play about good League One standard. So I think that's a good move for him. I mean, we've seen it with Johnny Hayes. He came through our youth system as well. He's done brilliantly for Aberdeen. So, you know, best of luck to Craig. I always wish former Reading Academy players well, wherever they go. Jake Cooper has been subject of a bid from Millwall. They've apparently made two approaches for him and are still working out a deal with Reading. Are you in a hurry to let him go, Westy?
I said off air, I like Jake Cooper. I think you've seen some games where he's been really good, excellent, because he's got the stature. You know, he's a big, strong footballer. But I think for Stam, he's not a player that's going to get many games because he's not much of a footballer. If you ever watch him play, he's not a great footballer. But then you have players like Sonko that weren't footballers either but were great defenders. I think they'd probably sell him. But again, I think if he'd have been sold maybe a year ago, his stock was really high, you'd have probably got a good amount of money for him.
Well,
but
all
now,
linked with him, aren't they?
Yeah, what sort of money are they going to bid for? You'd expect to get, I'd be disappointed if they didn't get at least 800,000-900,000 for him. But last year, like I said, he's probably worth sort of 5 million when people were knocking on the door because he had a couple of decent performances. So he's one that I think could flourish in a different side, and we might look back and regret the fact that we sold him.
Yeah, I prefer him going alone really for the season than restock at the end of next season. But if we're going to have to sell him, modern teams a lot of times get a buyback clause, and if we can get a couple of million buyback clause on him, it wouldn't be the worst idea in the world.
Yeah, I can absolutely see why Stam would be happy to let him go, but I do have that slight feeling like we had with Mikel Antonio, where you thought it is the best move probably for the player and for the club right now. I mean, we've had this discussion, but Antonio was behind four very established and wingers and one new winger in McCleary. So McCleary, Robson, Kanu, Kebe, McEnough. So he wasn't going to play. So you had to let him go. Same thing with Cooper. You could say he's not going to get past Moore, Laurie, Blackett and McShane, but you've seen enough of him, and we did see it a couple of seasons ago when he had such that strong breakthrough in his first taste of professional football. Again, don't forget how young this guy is, that if he goes and plays week in, week out somewhere else for a Millwall for a couple of seasons, that he could turn into a really good player, and it's one that Reading fans would be sat there thinking, that's when we get let go.
And he's another one that is a centre-back that's a goal threat because he is good in the air and he's a big, strong lad. And I think when you look at past those ones you just mentioned, I mean, McShane's been quite injury-prone this season, so you're left with three. And I think if you're struggling in a game, he's the sort of player you could put on to try and get you a goal, whereas like you look at Gravenberch and people like that, that really is, he's not below them, is he? So unless you're going to buy another centre-back and sort of stock up that way, I would be tempted to keep him. And again, I think he will go on to do better things than Millwall.
Yeah, we'll come on to areas we'd look to strengthen and what needs to be done for next season in just a minute. But just, again, wrapping up the season gone past, again, congratulations to Jan Kermigan, who's won the Tarlest End Player of the Season Award ahead of Liam Moore and Ali Alhabsi. So a bit different to how the club vote went in the end, Mark. We had the benefit of, you know, the club's voting was done in the middle of April, so we had the whole playoff campaign and stuff to look back on. But out of the two, who would you have gone for, Kermigan or Alhabsi?
I'm pretty sure I went Kermigan, Moore, Alhabsi in the Tarlest End vote as my top three. And I think looking at the votes, that's what a lot of people did as well. So it's not a real surprise to me. Kermigan did have a better second half of the season than he did the first half. And he certainly had the better of the playoff campaigns compared to the other two who were up there and compared to McCleary, etc. as well. So I think he definitely is worthy.
Westy, who would you have gone for?
Yeah, I think I'd have gone for Kermigan based on the entire season, not just because he scored a lot of goals for us and it's been a long time since we've had a player to score that many goals. but also just his all-round work rate. I've said during times on this show, his defensive, that the fact that he's so needed defensively, that it's not just about what he does up front, where he's been up front on his own a lot of time. It's about what he does for the whole side, and I think he's contributed massively to our success this year.
No, and I'm the same. I think I would have given it to Kenwood, but again, I don't begrudge Ali Alhabsi. And you know, if that just if Lou Moore and Jordan Obita don't miss their penalties, we're sat here talking about Ali Alhabsi's the man that got run into the Premier League.
So, yeah,
he could have won it if that was
exactly.
To be fair to Alhabsi, over the course of the whole season, I mean, he's kept us in so many games and kept us from getting beat. I mean, he's been excellent, and he's been excellent last year as well.
Yeah, just that one moment at Old Trafford to forget for you, Ali.
Yeah.
But apart from that...
But if you're going to do it...
Yeah, why not? In front of the BBC cameras at Old Trafford.
When it's 3-0.
Exactly.
Worldwide cover.
And our Rookie of the Year award has gone to Liam Kelly. He won it over... I was going to say Taylor Swift then, but I mean, he has won it over Taylor Swift. He's won it over John Swift as well, and Tyler Blackett. So the thing I liked about this, Westy, was that there actually were a lot of candidates, and we've run this award for three seasons now, and it's been kind of automatic picks, really. It was Tish Boller last season, and it was Cooper the year before that. But this year, you had Kelly, you had Blackett, you had Swift, you had Callum Harriott.
Yaku Mate as well.
So you had five pretty strong candidates there, maybe not Mate, but a lot of... So that shows the youth... And the strength that's coming through.
Yeah, it does. We have got, like I say, we've got a young and hungry, I think Steve Coppell used to say, and I think they've certainly got that at the moment, and they've got some good quality as well. Like I say, we just need to bolster that with a bit of steel, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So, again, that really does wrap up the season. Just, I say wrap up, and then I keep bringing one thing in. One more thing. I'll let you finish, but I just got to say one thing. And it's to do with an article you wrote, Mark. The whole, was the season exciting?
Yeah.
Because we can all celebrate coming third in the league and the tremendous run to Wembley that we had. And it, if, you know, you look at it and in the history books, it will always look like what, I mean, it is. I think it's Reading's, what is it, the seventh or eighth most successful season in, what, 140 odd years of Reading? So, you know, on paper, brilliant. But, you know, you ran a poll on the Tarlest Denny, you asked people, was it an exciting season? 44% said yes, but 56% said no. So more people found it not exciting season than an exciting season.
Yeah, and that's a surprise when you go to Wembley, really, isn't it? Because I think we'd probably all agree that the 2011 season we lost to Swansea was quite an exciting season in general, looking back on it. I mean, I kind of broke it down as to whether you make comebacks. I think the team in general and club in general has made a good comeback. Whether you've achieved things, and we have achieved things relatively, and also whether it's entertaining, whether your football is entertaining. And the fact that we didn't score four goals in a single game until the last game of the season shows to me that there were opportunities missed when it was coming to entertaining football.
It's always, all season, I think, been efficient rather than exciting. And I've sat through games and seen them win and come out and thought, well, didn't really, you know what I mean, there's nothing to get anyone going. And I thought it's still towards the back end of the season, it's been a little bit better. So the first part of the season, let's face it, it was dreadful when I was getting results. Hopefully, after this year being behind them now, that it will click, because it never seemed to click all year, did it?
It was never supposed to, though, and nobody expected. I mean, we ran a set of pre-season predictions on the Tarlest, and nobody had us third. No entry had us anywhere near. So that's been, you know, step one of raising expectations, but. Do you think, and this does lead us nicely into next season now, I mean, what are your early expectations now? Because Reading are theoretically the best championship team left.
In theory, yeah, they are. Again, my expectation is to improve, I think.
So top two?
I hopefully, but I just want to see that, like I say, we win and win in a bit of style and dominate teams, because we haven't really done that all season. Although we've had spells where we've been good and we've kept the ball, it doesn't always go anywhere, does it? And sometimes it gets a little bit ploddy. And you think, if they just up the pace a little bit, make a little bit more quality in the side, I would expect them to be in the top six again.
Really?
Yes.
Mark?
Yeah, I mean, you can kind of break the championship down into two sections for next season. There's going to be the section of Sheffield Wednesday, Villa, etc., who are going to be competitive. And I think we have to be competitive with those teams. Whether that means we're eighth after 30 games, whether that means we're second after 30 games, doesn't really matter too much in my mind, as long as we're competitive. When it comes to the lower ranked teams such as QPR, Burton. I want us to go to those games and to be on top and to have 90 minutes or near enough 90 minute performances where we're coming away with 3-0 wins, we're coming away with the odd 4-0, 5-0 if it suits us. And those are the ones where I think it's a lot more satisfying as a fan when you go to those games and you know that you've been the better team and you've got a clear result as well.
Even if they dominated for 25 minutes and scored two and then killed the game by keeping it forever, great. You know, I mean, that's to me is winning a game comfortably, managing a football match. But I don't think they've really done that.
They've not been able to turn the screw, have they?
No, and they've always sort of, it's always been there or thereabouts winning, there or thereabouts getting beat, apart from the few hammerings we've took.
And that is what worries me going into next season, and why my expectations aren't necessarily as lofty. I mean, again, we're recording this before Reading have made any signings or sold anyone, so much can change in 2 months. So this is just my gut feeling on now, but I look back in my mind over those games and I think of the... We had the whole luck debate earlier in the season, didn't we, of, oh, are Reading lucky? But you look at it and you look at those coin flip moments, and so many coin flip moments went Reading's way this season.
Yeah.
The penalty saves, the rebounds were ridiculous. You're never, ever going to say...
You can't legislate for that game.
No team is ever going to be as... Again, don't want to say lucky. It's going to be in the right place at the right time as often as Reading were from penalties. What was it? 5 penalties scored, 5 on the rebound, and 1 was pure missed. That's bonkers.
I think there's lots of players in there that will improve again, though, if you know what I mean, because you've got a lot of young players.
Yes.
And I think they will improve again, but it's just the concern must be, with Kermigan having such a great season, can you rely on him to do it for another championship season, getting towards the fact that he's going to retire again?
I think the spine of the back of the team is great, and with the addition and what I've seen out of Alori as well, the way Jordan Obita finished the season strongly, Habsi's doing well, doesn't seem to be showing any signs of ageing at the moment, and you've got more McShane still doing his thing as well, though again he's banned for the first couple of games this season.
Yeah,
that's, I'm very happy that, and George Evans is looking good in front of them as well. Swift and Kelly, you've got a really strong spine, but it's that forward cluster that's, there's still question marks there. And that's where championship games are won and lost at the end of the day. So that is what, for me, they need to improve on. And that's why right now, with the squad that I see and I look at now, I think it's a team that I expect to be top half. I don't expect them to be top six. I think I look at the teams coming down. Sunderland always spend loads of money. Borough have still got what was a very good championship side.
Yeah, Borough be strong.
Hull, again, we don't know.
Expect them to be strong in
there, there, and
one
thereabouts.
One of Hull and Sunderland will be good, maybe not both, but one of them surely will click.
Yeah, I think Sunderland will find it hard, like Villa did. I think they'll come down, and they're obviously not a good side, as they would have done a lot better than they did this year. So they're going to need a lot of work, and I think for the first part of the season, they'll do what Villa have done. They will struggle. They'll probably win games at home and get beat away regularly. And by the time they click into gear, a bit like Villa, it'll be too late.
Yeah. But and then you've got the Norwiches, the Derbies, the Villas,
Fulham,
Leeds, Wednesday, lots of teams, and it's so competitive. Someone,
still teams like Wolves can pop up as well.
Absolutely. Someone put out a tweet the other day, and it was a mock league table. I think it was a Norwich fan. It was like number one, why second, two, third, we, fourth, bother trying to predict this league. It always is completely random.
It
Ipswich.
Is, yeah.
I saw that.
And it is, because if you, I guarantee we can sit here now, we can even sit here on the first day of next season when the squads are announced, we can go, we could probably get a consensus of they're going to be there, and we'll look back at the end of the season and go, pfft.
Well, even the teams coming up, Sheffield United and Bolton, they're big clubs. Yeah. You know, I mean, not little sides coming up, they are big sides coming up.
I did actually do maybe as an ending note on this, because we have sort of tailed off quite a lot, haven't we?
That's what this show is about.
As an ending note, I did a supporters bunch for a different team that my dad knows a person from. It's Carlisle, actually. They do a prediction thing where you pick the top six or top three of each league and the bottom three, and the only ones I got right out of the championship were Brighton being, I put them first, although they almost finished first, and then I got Rotherham as bottom. Everything else was completely wrong.
Really?
And that's how tough it is.
So what do Reading need to do then? Because you two are both saying you're expecting to be in that top six mix. What do they need to do to guarantee that? Or have they got enough at the moment?
I think they need a bit of a steel in midfield, a big, strong central midfielder, and they need to make sure that Kermigan's goals can be replaced with someone who offers them something a little bit different, maybe.
Yeah, because Graben's gone back as it stands.
Exactly. Again, not Graben, but you want someone who's got some pace and is different to what we have.
Would you not have Graben back?
No.
No?
I don't think there's any point.
I don't think he'd done enough for me to say that he was a player that was going to get you into the Premier League.
Probably quite expensive as well.
Yeah, I think he's... No, again, he showed little flashes that he was half decent, but in general, I don't think he performed that well. Was a complete waste.
I wouldn't mind having him on loan again if we're not paying 50 grand a week or whatever his wages. I thought he showed.
If you're bringing him on loan and you're also bringing in another player, then great. But
he's not the answer on his own.
He's not the answer, no.
Mark, what's top of your shopping list?
Yeah, I think it probably is the attack that we've got to focus on. I think we've just got to shift out these players, you know, like Sandro Weiss. And I put Dennis Rackles in the same sort of categories. These kind of nowhere players.
Poor Rackles. I don't like him. I never liked him.
I don't see the point in us in them being there. So move them on. Make the players like Vandenberg and Blackett your squad players as opposed to your first choice. And then have, you know, your spine that we've talked about, Kermigan with some supplementary forces as well in attack. And I think the players that are young will improve.
Yeah, and we also got some young players coming back as well from loan. You've got Tariq Fossey. Don't forget the potential. And he was actually starting to show it at the end of the season at Colchester as well. Yeah. Finished the season really well. Jack Stacey scored an absolute wonder goal to get Exeter to Wembley. So there's a bit
Reading loanees completely dominated the League Two playoffs. Didn't they? One scores ends. A wonder goal, one pokes it over the line with his bum at the other one.
Yeah, and has now been released from Reading.
Yeah.
He was released before that just to complete a miserable week for him. Sorry, Stuart Wall.
Deleted his Twitter as well.
Yeah. Oh, dear, poor guy. I mean, lots to be done. I mean, we'll touch on a bit more because we have a few questions in the mailbag, but that does put a bow really in the season. It was I will ask this question just quickly. Favourite game of the season? Favourite moment of the season?
My favourite game of the season was Fulham at home. The one that got called off and then got rearranged. Because I thought it was a really, really good game of football. And especially at the end, it was a super...
You mean you could see what was going on?
The next time. Not the game that got called off, the game that got rearranged. Yeah. That, I thought that was the best home game of the season. I thought it was exciting. I thought both teams looked really good. And obviously the penalty drama at the end made it even more brilliant. But that was probably my highlight game of the season.
Mark?
Yeah, I'd say Brentford at home and Norwich at home both get honourable mentions. They're both good games of football. I probably struggle to look past... I don't know, it's the Leeds or the Fulham game at home for me. They're both very similar games. I'd say the Leeds game just tips it because of the... You know, at that stage in the season, obviously you're more optimistic than celebratory. And I think... pitch invasions after a semi-final win are always a little bit premature. They're not my cup of tea. And the Leeds game, the goal that we scored was a really good goal as well.
Yeah, from Jan.
And the atmosphere around that was very fun.
And the thing that impressed me the most about Reading this season was the fact that when they did get some hammerings, they came back strong and they didn't let it get them down. And they stuck with their principles and again, it worked.
Yeah, and mine was the win at Bristol City, that comeback win. Mm. Okay. I've not brought it up until now because I didn't want to jinx it, but I actually went through the entire season this year without seeing Reading lose in 90 minutes.
Good work.
That because I missed, because of my work schedule, I missed the midweek games with QPR and Villa. So they were the only two home defeats, and I don't get away from them. The only away games I saw were in the playoffs and at Bristol City. I know I'm a massive plastic. Brentford. So I missed all those. So I watched Reading go unbeaten. I didn't even see them losing the cup because I didn't go to Old Trafford and I didn't go to Arsenal.
Yeah.
So I managed to go through it. It's so weird to be sitting through an invincible season and yet I'm sat here thinking I didn't actually have that much fun.
It's weird because for the whole year, the calendar year of 2015, I don't think I saw us win. So
I think I had that in 2000 and what was that season we finished miserably under Coppell and started badly under Rodgers. I think I went about a year without seeing us win.
Oh, yeah, 2009.
Yeah. So in that context, I should be able to pick out loads, but no, it's that Bristol City comeback for me.
So, what would you give it out of 10 then the whole season? What do you reckon?
6.5.
Mm, I was going to say 7.
Yeah, I'd say 7, I think.
Yeah, if we'd won, 7. We'd be
if we get an 8 season next year, then that should be alright.
Yeah, well, what is. So, presumably the one of 6 seasons is a 10.
That's definitely a 10.
Really. Well, what was the last McDermott promotion season? That was an 8 for me.
Well, that was, because...
8.5.
It was dreadful until the back end. And funnily enough, I watched them two games the other day, Southampton and West Ham games, which was brilliant.
Yeah.
And I think, really, for a team that didn't really seem to touch the ball too often, it was a
it's got seven goals in two away games.
Borderline miracle that we actually won the games. But yeah, that was exciting at the end. So yeah, I'd have to give it maybe 7.5.
Okay, cool. And what was last season then?
Well, we marked it, are we? Yeah. I think that was about a 2.5, maybe yeah. 3.
Yeah, very, very poor.
Because we stayed up.
Yeah, just about. Okay. Right, time to move on to the mailbag to get some of your thoughts on the playoff final, on what needs to be done, and lots more, so stay tuned for that.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Read the blog on thetarlhurstend.com.
As always, a huge thank you to everyone who has chipped into the mailbag via at thetarlhurstend on Twitter, thetarlhurstend@gmail.com for emails, facebook.com/thetarlhurstend, and our YouTube channel at youtube.com/thetarlhurstend, and of course, a massive, massive, even bigger thank you to everyone who continues to help the show via Patreon, our crowdfunding campaign. It's how you can directly help support the show financially, support the website, and help us invest in new equipment, new pieces of software, lots of cool bits and pieces that we can only do thanks to your generosity. And a big thank you to Ryan Nelson and Derek Walmsley, who had already been contributing this season, and I noticed after the playoff final upped their contribution. And that means even more, because it's a sign that not only, you know, you stick your hand in your pocket, you're prepared to boost it even more. So thanks to those two and everyone who continues to do so on a month-to-month basis, be it a one-off or a monthly donation. It all really, really helps. You can go to patreon.com/thetarlhurstend. That's patreon.com/thetarlhurstend to find out how you contribute. Or if you've got any questions, just drop us an email to thetarlhurstend@gmail.com. Right, Scott in the States. As a new fan, I didn't understand what you meant by calling the playoffs a lottery. Then I saw Huddersfield score one goal in 330 minutes to get promoted. Got it. Lottery. Win automatic promotion or expect heartbreak. Huge thanks for the great work all season long. Thank you.
He's learning well early doors. It took me years to get to that stage.
Thanks for the kind words, Scott. Mike Crone, who sent a longer email in, which, you know, thanked us for the efforts this year. So we thank you for that, Mike. But I picked out his bits. He said on the playoff final, he says, "My overwhelming feeling after the game was actually one of frustration. I couldn't believe how negative we were. The 3-5-2 was a tactical master against Fulham and fully justified against a good footballing team. But in this game, I thought Stam got it wrong. It should have been more ambitious. Huddersfield rely on overlapping fullbacks, and we play into their hands by playing wingbacks who got overloaded too easily. If it had gone back to the 4-5-1 of earlier in the season, what happened to Behrens? Our wide players could have pinned the fullbacks in or got behind them and doubled up defensively. On the day, we had almost no attacking threat and resorted to long balls to our isolated strikers. I think it's part of the reason Swift was so poor. He got crowded out and outnumbered and was feeding on scraps. Anyway, that said, Stam's done a great job and far exceeded my expectations. I think I predict 16th place. The squad is now in decent shape, and with a few additions, we should be capable of another strong season next time. In historic perspective, to see Reading a good championship team is still very satisfying. At least my mates know who we are these days." There you go, that's a nice positive view of it.
Nice finish.
It's nice that we've kind of been almost spoilt now by playoff final defeats. At least we get there.
There is that, yeah. At least we're there or thereabouts.
There must be quite a few teams out there who haven't even been to the new Wembley yet.
Probably a few of them. Do seem to get a trip for anything these days, don't you?
Yeah.
Playoffs, semi-finals.
Might have gone on tour around there or something, you know what I mean?
I mean, every Premier League team gets to go to Wembley next season.
Of course, yeah. Yeah.
So there you go. Luke Jarrett. "Hey, thought I'd send you a bit of a longer message than one I can send on Twitter. Thank you very much. This one is a bit longer than my normal questions. Basically, I was watching the Champions League final, and as you could watch in virtual reality. So I had an idea and want your thoughts on it. Basically, for myself being a student in Manchester, no matter how much I like to get a season ticket, it's just not doable. And that coupled with the fact home for me is now in Somerset as my dad's in the RAF. So season tickets just don't work for me. So my idea was a virtual season ticket. You pay a discounted price off a normal ticket, and each home game you plug in your VR headset and watch from your seat. I understand it's a few years off, but I'd like to get your thoughts on the whole idea. Personally, I think it'd be great for people like myself for whom a season ticket just isn't doable. But the major hurdle would be getting it past the likes of Sky and BT. Would love to hear your thoughts on this, or how you think the future of viewing football is heading."
Well, they're doing it, aren't they? For foreign fans abroad, they can watch Reading all their matches.
They can, yeah.
So they're doing that. And I'm
not in virtual reality yet.
No, but I'm surprised that there's not been brought in quicker, because it is a massive revenue stream that is basically untapped, isn't it, for the clubs. If you could rent out your games to foreign watchers for, I don't know, £3, £4, £5 a game or whatever you want to do, there's a lot of money to be made.
Well, definitely. This is the service they're bringing in. It's a subscription service next year.
It's like a season ticket, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think this is one of the points that the Derby chairman, is it Mel Morris? who's the Derby chairman up there. He's locked in a battle with the Football League over the sale of rights and what they can do.
Do you know what they should do? I've always thought they should do this, because it doesn't matter what club you support, that every club has a lot of supporters that don't go or don't live there anymore, or obviously I moved away, I moved abroad, Australia, wherever it might be. I think if you reduce the prices of actually getting into the ground and field them every week, and then sold the TV rights to fans abroad, I think they would make fortunes and they'd have full stadiums every single week.
You reckon?
Definitely. I think if Reading, I would go and watch Reading anyway, even if I could watch it on the telly.
Oh, I'm the same.
Do you know what I mean? And if you, obviously, people in Reading, you would have thought they wouldn't be able to watch at home because you've got to stay in down the road. But for everybody else who's not going to go, like your guy we just spoke to there, or just wrote to us there, if he could pay a fiver a match, I'm sure he would. And if that price come off our season ticket prices and us getting in the ground, he would watch a game that had a full stadium every week.
Yeah, but that's the Major League Baseball model as well.
Yes. It's local black. In America, they do local blackout. So until the game is sold out, you can't watch it on local television, but as soon as it's sold out, it becomes available. Yeah. I don't know that there would be enough Reading fans watching away from the Medeski to make it worthwhile.
How many fans do you think we got in general? I mean,
look, how many we didn't. Let's be honest, we didn't sell out Wembley.
We didn't sell out Wembley, but I know for a fact that I've got four friends that are all big Reading fans that live abroad, and that's just me as an individual.
I would say conservatively there are, well, not conservatively, let's call it 50,000 people that roughly care about Reading.
But you've
in
got,
some way,
you've got
shape,
opposition
or form.
Fans as well. Obviously, it's two teams.
Yeah,
it's in the
two
game.
Teams.
Yeah,
so,
true.
You know, if we play, I mean,
how much money would Leeds make? How much money would Leeds make if they sold?
Well,
they
make loads.
They'd make
Sheffield Wednesday and
millions.
All these sort of teams. But the thing is that the problem that we have is that all of our money at the moment, or effectively all our money, is coming from domestic TV rights. And domestic TV rights for Premier League is huge. It's £45 million per team per year.
Well, they said the last set of domestic Premier League rights meant that every Premier League club could let every fan in for free.
Yeah.
And the difference.
But if you look at the
swallowed.
Domestic TV audiences from the Championships to the Premier League, I think the good games get about half as many, and the normal games get about, you know, a quarter as many as a normal Premier League game. We don't get a quarter of £40 million per season per team, do we?
No.
And we're miles off that.
Yeah. There was a tweet that was tweeted out by someone who had access to the viewing figures that has since been deleted. We were going to run an article on it, but without this tweet, you can't run it. But it was looking at the viewing figures. And if ever you wonder why Leeds are on telly every week, their viewing figures dwarf Reading. I think Reading Ipswich got something like, I think you saw it as well, Mark. Was it something like 250,000 people tuned in to watch
it? Yeah,
I
thought it was about 200,000,
yeah. And the biggest Leeds games get about 800,000.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Because they're a big worldwide supported club.
So,
but the only problem you're going to have is if they've done that with a Championship, which they are sort of doing it abroad, the problem you'll have then is if the big clubs say, well, we want to sell our own TV matches,
yeah,
and then that will kiddle.
And that exactly, and you still look at the money that Sky and BT and other television companies give, and through the BBC or Channel 5, whatever, through secondary rights, will still dwarf the 4,000 people that pay a tenner a month to watch Reading World TV.
Yeah.
That's not going to make up the amount of money you get from Sky.
Of course not.
And if Sky won't then be happy, because people might think, oh, well, I'm not going to have my TV subscription now because I can just watch Reading matches. So as Luke said, that's going to be the big way of getting it past it. But going back to your overall question, Luke, and the VR thing, I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, great, yeah.
It's just how it's done. I mean,
I don't think it can be cheaper than the season ticket, though. I'm not sure how you can justify, because if it becomes really good technology, then you will get fans choosing that over going to the game, won't you?
Well, yeah, I suppose if you've got a sophisticated headset and you can hear the crowd, you can see everything you want to see.
In the winter, when people think, it's a bit cold.
Yeah, and you can join in with the... I say join in with the crowd. It's almost like you've got a microphone to blare you out into the stadium.
You can be in the box and get in the corners.
Yeah, there's just this annoying robot next to you that's blaring out abuse from various different voices around the world.
Yeah, that's probably not the best idea.
Yeah, okay, so maybe interactive chanting is a way off. But yeah, you're right.
I do worry that would take away attendances.
Yeah, this is a bigger issue actually that we could probably spend a whole day discussing. So we will move on, and maybe we'll come back to it next season. But thank you very much for the email, Luke. Bradvurst says, thoughts on Stam to Ajax Leeds? Lol, rumours. I think it's too early, personally. Yaps down Brunt of Reading have a 3-year plan, so I expect he'll stay. Also, are there any League One or Two players you'd like to see Reading take a punt on? Ollie Watkins from Exeter for me. Well, we've had our thoughts on the Stam Ajax rumours, but any lower league players catching your eye this season?
Not really. I think it's a massive step up the championship now for players that play at a lower league. I mean, we've seen some of our players that are nowhere near the side do really well in League 2. You know what I mean? And we see players in League 1 that do okay, you know what I mean? But they're not good enough to play for us, and we've seen them, we've watched them. So I don't think there's not that many players around now that the big clubs don't know about.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I think if you tend to now see players come back, it's because they've slipped away from the bigger sides.
You like get Swift, so. You get them every now and then. You get a Callum Wilson, yeah, you one. Get a Benikofobe, who you really think they yeah. are a cut above.
But even he stepped down from Arsenal, didn't he, Benikofobe?
Yes.
So I'm saying they've stepped out of big clubs and gone and played a little bit lower, yeah. and come back. You very rarely find one that's been in the academy or playing for like Torquay that has...
Like a Dele Alli.
Yeah, all of a sudden... He's jumped up to the Premier League. It just yeah. doesn't happen anymore. The network's so big now that it's almost designed so it doesn't happen.
Yeah, I've got to admit, I don't follow League 1 and 2 enough. And this question comes up to us quite a lot. Who would you like to see a sign? With all the time, unfortunately, I spend writing on Reading and talking about Reading, I just don't have that extra capacity to keep my eye too much across it.
No, and if you look at the players that we signed over the last year or two, it would have been players that you probably wouldn't have even heard of.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? Players from abroad that you would never even been on the radar.
No one was tipping Kevin Doyle.
No, but even this season, you know, your Beerens, players like Van
Joseph Berg, Mendes,
yeah, Mendes, you wouldn't have even had them on your radar. You wouldn't have known about them to be thinking about signing them.
No, it was only really sort of Liam Moore that was a real sort of name, so, yeah. and maybe Blackett to a lesser extent.
Yeah. I think that's better for us. I think plucking those slightly cheaper Premier League outcast, so you have the quality, yeah. they've got there somehow. I think that's a much more profitable route for us.
Look at how what Brighton did with Glenn Murray. That's the type of signing I want Reading to make, but it's difficult identifying them because, you know, like you say, you never know who's available and how much money you've got to spend and who wants to join
we
you.
We could have Ollie Norwood back off Brighton.
Why not? Actually, well, do you know what? It'd be all right in Stam's system, but.
Well, it was going to be built around him, wasn't it?
It
until
was.
He left.
So, do you know what? Saying the players you'd have back, I'd have Tish Boller back.
I remember saying that Tish Boller, the people inside were concerned that he wasn't going to come back and be the player he was anyway, and that's why they sold him.
I thought it was because he wanted to go.
Yeah, he did want to go, but they wasn't too unhappy about letting him go because they were worried about his injuries and the fact that yeah. he was struggling for fitness, and they thought, do you know what, it's better to cash in.
Well, based on this season, again, Reading have done a bit of a steal. I noticed Nick Blackman is apparently on the verge of his contract cancelled as well. So again, thanks Nick Hammond.
Did he ever score for Derby?
He scored a penalty. He scored one penalty in his season and a half so far at Derby.
He lived off of 3 months of decent form, really. That's all.
But he got millions for it, though. Yeah.
Imagine how much he's earned of it at Derby as well. That's his career made.
Oh, indeed. Brilliant. Simon Edwards. Must not forget what a great season we had. Shame about the final. Anyone could win on pens. Build on this one and go one better. Matt Everson asked the question we've all asked ourselves over the last few weeks. Why do Reading never win big games?
It's not entirely true. They do win big games.
We do in the league. We just don't in, you know, finals.
I tend to find Reading play better in games where they've got second chances. Like, the big games we have won, and you look at the Forest game at home, the West Ham, the Southamptons, none of them were, we've got to win this game.
Make or break.
There always was a plan B.
Birmingham at home, there wasn't a plan
exactly.
B.
Exactly. That was basically a playoff final.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. But it's, whether it's luck, I don't know. Like Westy, you said earlier, it's not like it's the same group of players.
No.
If we lost three playoff finals in 3 years, you might say, well, it's just this group of bottle jobs.
Yeah. It's not even, because it's so spread out now, it's not even the same group of fans. You know what I mean? There's a lot of new people that would have seen most of these games.
No, maybe it's me and you, Westy. Maybe we're holding the team.
Maybe we are jinxes. Maybe we should stop going.
Let the younger generation have their chance of heartbreak.
That's it. I did see him win a Simul Cup final, so I can hold on to that one.
Okay. Yeah, it's just me then with a four strikeout. So I did miss the FA Cup semi, so you can't blame that one on me.
No, when you're full.
Alex Everson, why always us? Again, I don't know. Steve Curtis, aka Royal Hoops. If we play four at the back next season and no defenders are brought over the summer, who are the two centre backs if Stam stays? And five signings made. Do Reading build on this year or return to the norm mid-table? Well, you two, again, we sort of answered that. You two see us being top six. I see us certainly being top half, maybe higher. But that's my 10th is my realistic expectation. And anything else is a bonus. Who's your two centre back pairing? Is it Alorie and Moore now?
Definitely, I think.
So no room for McShane.
No, I think McShane. again, if you're playing three at the back, that's obviously going to be McShane, isn't it? But I think McShane, again, is a good centre-back. He is a championship centre-back now. And I think them other two have got the ability to be Premier League centre-backs because they've got the attributes to be that. They're quick, they're young,
good, you know, on the
ball. Decent in the air. Yeah, they're good footballers. And I think for McShane, he's a great player to have there and he's great to play in a three. But I think if you're going to play a two, I'd play the two that look like they can progress further in their career than probably McShane ever has.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, count me for three. Felix, who's started writing for us here at the Tirelessly, and you can go check out. He was one half of our debate piece on whether Stan will stay or go. I'll go check that one out if you can at thetirelessly.com. He asks, who is more important going forward, Brian Tevreden or Yap Stam? Also, should we sell Gareth McCleary? And what would fair fan expectation be? And what will be the most exciting games next season? So a lot of questions there. Don't get greedy, Felix. Just because you're writing for us now doesn't mean you can fill the mailbag with five questions. I'm joking. You're welcome to as many as you like. In order then, quick one-word answers. Who's more important for Reading going forward, Stam or Tevreden?
Stam.
Yep, I think I agree. I think it's a partnership. I think you need, as long as you've got a manager and a technical director on the same page.
You need a good team to have a good team, if that makes sense.
Both are very important. But at the end of the day, you come and sign for Reading probably because of Yap Stam. Yeah. You don't come because
he
of
makes
Brian
the he picks the team.
Yes, and none of the players that they've bought so far, again,
a lot of flops in that.
Well, yeah, I think he's done very well so far, Brian. But he's not made the sort of signings. You know, with Leicester, people like Riyad Mahrez, where you go, yeah, or even Reading under Hammond.
I think Koppel said, and it's normally true, that the more you spend, the less risk you take. And I think if you look at the players they spent money on, they've been very good.
Yeah.
In general.
So yeah, I think it's down for the time being, but that could well change. Should we sell McCleary?
No, I don't think you'd be out. You'd have to spend a lot of money to replace him. And although I know he's had a lot of injuries this year and he has had a lot of injuries the year before, when he plays and he's at his best, he can be unplayable. And I think his stats are quite high for goal assists and stuff like that. And he scored quite a few goals this year.
Yeah.
I think he struggles up front on his own, but I think when he's on it, he's difficult to stop.
Yeah, I keep him. I can see him finishing his career here. What would fair fan expectation be? Again, we've discussed our expectations, but from a Reading fan base, should this be a Reading fan base that is grumbling in November if we are 14th?
Potentially. I think it's more important as to how we're there. If we're there because everyone's dropped off and players like Moore and Swift are playing awfully, then yeah, we will be grumbling. If we're, 8th, and people are saying, oh, we should be fine for automatic promotion, I think that's a bit too harsh. I think fair fan expectations should just be competitive and in and amongst it.
Yeah, I think we all realise it's a difficult league, but we've got the ability to do well in it again, I think. And I think Reading fans have grumbled pretty much all season, even though they finished third. So
yeah, I think as long as Reading are roughly around that top half mix and looking closer to the top six and the bottom three, I think you should be patient.
Yeah, and see how it ends. About, don't we? I think we all do.
Exactly. Luke Jarrett again. Chance on getting Tammy Abraham was on fire for Bristol City. I think he's going to Newcastle by the sounds of it on loan.
Can't see him staying in Championship.
No, I think that most of these big clubs will put you in a Championship. If you do well, then they want you to progress a little bit. Yes. Then you either go to Germany or Italy or you go into the Premier League's bottom tier, and I think that's what they do with him. It's a shame because he's a very good player.
Steve Bennett asks, we've been lent $60 million by the Chinese owner. Should we be worried about the money coming in the form of loans?
We should be worried, but we should be more worried if we don't get a £60 million loan with our parachute payments running out.
Exactly.
Yeah, basically, as long as money is somewhere, then that's better than money being nowhere.
Yeah. And that fulfills the mailbag. So again, thanks to everyone who's contributed via at the Tireless End on Twitter, thetirelessend@gmail.com, facebook.com/thetirelessend. And youtube.com/TylerSaid. Feel free to please keep that feedback coming in over the summer. That just about wraps up this show. Hopefully, we've done a good job closing out the season. Sorry we don't have a promotion to celebrate at the end of it, but we can only work with what we're given.
That's it.
We should have just pretended that we'd won promotion. Just we're doing an alternative show.
I think it'd be great if someone actually wouldn't have seen the game and then had listened to us. I thought, wow, I didn't remember that happening. That'd have been wonderful for them. But no, I think we have to be honest, and we always are. And personally, I'd like to thank everyone for listening again, because without them, there would be no show.
Absolutely. Yeah. You guys, I mentioned it in the Patreon plug for those that give us the financial support, but it's not just that, it's those of you You send us in tweets, you send us in emails. I very much understand that not everyone can support it financially. Not everyone thinks we deserve it, and that's your total opinion, and you're welcome to it. But those of you who do interact with us, who give us your support, are fantastic as well. I'd like to thank Reading Football Club as well this season. You know, we are on this show, I like to think we call it as it is. We've called the club out, and we think they've done things that we don't agree with. But this season, I think off the field, Reading Football Club have been going just in one direction. I think they've been fantastic. Some of the initiatives they've done with tickets and atmosphere and match days and things like that. I just think that for the first time in a long time, I can sit there and look at the football club and really go, yeah, I'm damn proud to be a Reading fan, and I'm happy. You feel that identity slowly coming back.
Yeah, definitely. They were pushing in the right direction. I'd like to say, on behalf of the listeners, because I'm a listener as well now, that I think that guys that do this show and do the website, you, Wim, and everyone else behind you, all your team, do an amazing job, because you don't realise how much work goes into this. I used to do it at a much lower level than these guys, and the money that you've invested in them and the way this show's changed since I've done it is amazing. So well done, you guys.
Thanks, Wester. Your tenor is in the post.
You're tearing up there.
but no, thank you to everyone out there. And obviously, we've got a tremendous team of dedicated writers behind us. Again, we do this pretty much for free. And so the effort. And it goes to say as well that if you want to get involved with this show, with the website, just get in touch with us, just drop us an email. It started up as a group of fans trying to do something. We're still that. We're not some massive mega conglomerate. We're recording this in my study, in my house, so pulling the curtain back a little bit.
It's had a few moves, this show.
I have had a few moves. The rooms just seem to get smaller every time we move.
Yeah, pretty much.
As the missus shunts us off to more and more smaller directions. But yeah, thank you to everyone who's watched the YouTube channel, listened to this show, of course, and who reads the website as well. And to yourself, Westy, for giving up your time, Mark as well, all of the other co-hosts we've had over the season, Dave Hambags Harris, of course, Johnny Williams. We've had so many people come on the show. Steve Curtis, Beck has been on, loads of different people come on. It's nice to have Ben Greenwood the other week as well. I thought I'd bring that up as well. For those of you who we got a couple of comments, Westy, that we'd sold out.
Oh.
Did you see our little video?
No.
With Carabao?
No.
Probably best not to see it then.
Oh dear, you have sold out, haven't you? We've not sold out at all. What I started it all to be, the fan show, you have sold out.
No, we were very lucky to be invited along to Medeski for the pre-Wembley show. And I do say, our chums at Carabao, we did a little video for them as well. And you know what? If you say it's only sold out, you know what? I'd like to see you turn down a chance to do something like that, and it was cool. We got to have a look around the stadium and things like that. So
we're still, the ultimate goal for the Tyler Sen is to be part of that Media 11 team that features
absolutely
at the end of the season.
This is the end goal.
Anyone with any powers listening for that, then just let us know that a couple of spots is free in that.
I've played in that game.
Really?
Yes.
Did you win?
No, we got beat 6-5.
I think they got hammered this year as well.
Beat 5-1 this year.
Yeah, they need the Tyler Sen's input. That's but look. I'll close this up by saying we're not going anywhere. We're having a little bit of a, you know, we're not pumping out 5-6 articles a day at the moment because there's not 5-6 articles worth of stuff to write, despite the best efforts of poor Johnny Lowe, who I do feel sorry for at the moment, who's desperately trying to churn out content out of anything.
He is dealing with scraps at the moment.
We'll wait for the Instagrams of players on holiday.
Exactly.
That's when the...
So, but look, we're still churning out content. This podcast, we're going to take a break for a few weeks, but it's not completely going dormant because I do have a long teased interview with DJ Mega Party.
Oh, it's the one
that you saw him at Wembley. So that will be coming out in the next few weeks. As I mentioned, we'll have the Wembley video diary up on the YouTube channel as well. So lots to look forward to. Keep the support coming in. Keep going on the website. Keep on listening. Thank you for tuning in all season long. This has been the Tyler Sen Podcast, episode number 131. I'm Dan Wimbush, and for Mark Mayo and Mr. Alan West and all of us here at the Tyler Sen, go away and enjoy the summer. Forget about penalties. Delete the game from your Sky Plus if you've not already done so. Trust me, you've missed nothing in the highlights. And we'll see you again in July. Go and enjoy it. And come on, you Rs.
get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End.